Hey, welcome to the Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles. My name is Kevin Riles, and they also call me One Take Kevin Riles. That's for Mr. Producer. But this week, we are talking about, we started Money May. How do I raise money for these real estate transactions? We have four guests set up this month, and I'm so excited that our first guest is Dion Warner with Warner & Associates. He's an attorney. He's going to tell us how to raise private funds for real estate transactions. So DJ, hit that music, please. Oh yeah, call me One Take.
Support for this program comes from the Digital Broadcasting Network, presenting podcasts and web series from everyday people who have an extraordinary passion to make the world a better place.
Hey, welcome back to the Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles. This is your host, Kevin Riles, and it's Kevin Riles and Friends. And as you remember from last month, I talked about doing Money May. How do I finance these real estate properties? What are some of those creative ways and different ways people can finance real estate? And so long story short, I decided to have the man come for our first Money May podcast. I have known Mr. Warner. Dion Warner is with us today. I've known him probably for at least the last 10 years, I know. And we met out networking, and then we've both worked with the same clients, me on the real estate side, him on the legal side. And so I wanted to have him come today and talk about different ways to raise private money to finance your real estate deals. He and I were just having a conversation off camera about getting calls in our offices about different ways to set up real estate transactions. So I want to introduce all of you to Dion Warner. Hello, Dion.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. So before we get started on these different ways to raise money for real estate and how to set up real estate transactions, I want people to get to know you a little bit. So Dion, I know, is a transactional attorney, but tell people about your background, kind of from high school on. How did you get into
high school?
Yeah, high school. So back in, yeah.
So I went to high school in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So people always say,
I did not know that.
I said, from Colorado. Why really? Did you leave Colorado? Because I got a good job in Houston. So the only reason to leave,
a beautiful place like Colorado. Yeah.
But I went to school in Colorado, University of Colorado, undergrad, economics degree.
Really?
Actually, economics, yeah. And then I went to law school at Howard University.
Okay,
Washington, D.C., HBU.
Right.
And graduated there, top 11% of the class.
Okay.
10, 11, somewhere in there.
Hey, you know what?
And after 15, got a job here in Houston. It was my first time coming to Houston. So I started with clerking for a federal judge. So
okay.
I clerked for 2 years for a federal judge, famous federal judge, actually, Gabrielle Kirk McDonald. She actually was appointed by President, I think it was President Clinton.
Okay.
Back in the day. And she was one of the first female black judges in the South.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
First one.
So very, very famous young lady. I talk to her all the time. She's just now retired.
Just now retired.
Finally
wow.
Finally retired. Right. But great history. But anyway, so I left that job and started with a large law firm called Andrews and Kurth.
Okay.
Still here in Houston.
Yeah, very large, very, very prominent large law firm.
And what I did for them, which what they did for me, what they taught me how to do actually, was to do initial public offerings. So I was doing IPOs.
Okay.
More so in the energy industry, oil and gas, natural resources. I actually did the initial public offering, the initial private placement and public offering for Mauna Loa Macadamia Nets.
Wow.
Yeah, out of Hawaii.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
And my biggest complaint about that deal, I didn't get to go to Hawaii.
So you did everything
all the other
here.
Partners went to Hawaii, and I didn't get to go to
You're
Hawaii.
You're the junior guy on that.
I was a junior guy. So I did all the work and didn't get to, get the vacation.
Right.
But it was a great deal. And so I did those for about 8 to 9 years.
Okay.
In which we were pretty much the firm doing IPOs in the South.
Okay. Okay.
And that's when IPOs were really hot. And so I did that for, like I said, 10 years. And then I started doing more private deals.
Okay.
So
private deals by private placement.
Private placements, private investment, M&A, mergers and acquisitions, private funding.
Okay.
Four individuals get together, partnerships, joint ventures. And so I did that for another 10 years.
Okay.
And when I left that firm, I actually started my own firm. We were talking about this earlier.
Right.
Being your own boss.
Right.
So I started my own firm in 1997.
Got you.
Been doing it ever since.
So I got to know you from a business standpoint. We both have a mutual client who you was trying to expand his business. Mm-hmm. And that's why, in theory, in when I got my MBA, we, you know, in my MBA is in finance, we talked about private placement memorandums. We talked about raising private money. And so in theory, I definitely knew about it. But my first real entree into that on a large scale, I had real estate clients put partnerships together and put mm-hmm. money in and things of that nature, was this particular client. Mm-hmm. So just to kind of explain that to folks, I had a client that wanted to expand his business, an existing operator of a business, and he was looking for ways to finance his new location. So long story short, we went out to the banks. Yep. And weren't getting the type of return or type of answers that we want. We could get financing, but we needed money to get to have that initial down payment. And so I recommended that my client talk to Dion. And so fast forward, that client was able to raise money and things of that nature. So I bring that up because I really want to talk about raising private dollars in the different ways to raise private dollars for real estate transactions for Money May, because just like you and I were talking off camera, we both get that call
all the time.
And it's a mystery. And I would say culturally, especially for African Americans, it is not something that we have in the past really done on the scale that we're about to talk about. But it's been around for
forever
and a day.
That's how most deals get done, with what's called a capital stack.
Right, capital stack.
So when you hear the term capital stack, what you're talking about is all the different funding sources that go into a project. So the first capital stack is your own money.
Right. Yes,
so
always.
So always, you always want to have some of your own money in a deal.
Right.
Because what that does is it shows confidence in investors that you believe in the deal. Right. When you don't have any money, you lose that credibility feature. And that hurts your ability to raise money. So the first part, I'd say there's a four-part capital stack everybody should consider.
All right.
And it doesn't matter whether you do a private placement or a private investment or you go raise money from the public, it's still, you have this four-part capital stack.
Okay.
First one is your money.
Right.
The second one is OPM.
Right. What does that stand for, Dion?
Yeah, So OPM is other people's money.
Right.
So the first part of other people's money is your friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to your friends and family and you raise some of the money too. Mm-hmm. And that becomes part of your capital stack.
Mm-hmm.
So when outsiders want to invest in you, they look at that money and your money as the same.
Gotcha.
Right? So you go there first. You always go there first. Because again, you're showing that confidence. Other people have confidence in my project or my deal.
They've invested
in me. They believe in me. And that gives other outside investors much more comfort.
Gotcha.
The third part of your capital stack mm-hmm. is what we call the private money.
Mm-hmm.
And private money is, you don't know the person, but there are people out there, they're called angel investors. Mm-hmm. And all they do is invest money
in deals.
Mm-hmm. And they might not give you 100% of it, mm-hmm. but they'll give you a big chunk of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also called family partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
They're called
family offices,
right. Individual investors, individual angel investors, same concept, mm-hmm. that group.
Mm-hmm.
And that group is where you do your private placement or your private transaction or your private investment. And the difference between which one you do mm-hmm. is how many of those folks there are.
Mm-hmm.
So if
mm-hmm.
it's one person, you don't need to do a private placement for one person.
Right.
Okay. But if it's more than one person, if it's five or six people, you might want to consider doing a private placement. That's when the liability kicks in.
Yes, okay. Gotcha.
And when the liability kicks in, you've got to minimize that risk by doing a disclosure document, which is called a private placement.
Gotcha.
So, and then the fourth level that everyone should consider is bank financing.
Right.
You still don't get away from the bank.
Right.
That's the cheapest money you could ever get for your transaction.
Right.
You think, yeah, well, they're charging me 8%, 7%, but that's much cheaper.
But they don't want equity or 12% than getting
equity. Right. Exactly.
The ownership. Right.
It's much cheaper than an ownership. And banks are willing to do deals mm-hmm. if the capital stack looks good to them and the project looks good, and you've got good credit. You can't get away from the bank criteria.
Right.
But if you can get past the bank criteria, they'll do deals.
Well,
because they're in the business of making money off their money.
And so I'm glad you broke it down into those four points, because I'll take those as we move forward. And so let's talk about smaller deals, and we'll go to large. So I found a small apartment complex, 12 units.
Yep.
Let's just say it's $400,000, $500,000.
And you want to do it.
I want to do it.
Hey, you can do it.
Right. I want to do it. So typically, for a deal like that from a bank financing standpoint, it's 25% down, right?
It's going to be about 25%.
Right.
And if you find a really good banker, they might do 20.
Right. And then Freddie, which I'll have this guy on later in the month, Freddie Mac has a small balance
right.
Loan now. It's 20% down. But with that, just say 25% down. So on a $500,000 dollar property, that's $100,000, $125,000. So
yep.
With that being said, I have 10 or I right. have 20. $1,000 of my own money.
Of cash?
Of cash.
Okay. How much you got in your retirement?
You better go this way.
I'm just saying. I mean, you got to look at all the different ways that you can put money into
this
deal.
That's right. So I got 10 in cash outside of my retirement. I got I'm trying to make the math work. I got another 15 available. I got more than that, but I can mess around
that
in my retirement.
That you're willing to risk.
Right. So yeah. I have 25 of my own funds to raise this $100,000, right? So this is a small deal. I got to raise another 75.
Correct.
Dion. Bring. Hey, Dion, I got to raise $75,000. How do I do that?
So the first thing I'm going to ask you is, what is the project?
It's a small apartment complex.
Every investor has appetites for certain things.
Right.
Okay, so, hey, small apartment complex. Hey, I know a couple of ball players. That's what they like.
Mm-hmm.
You show them the deal and say, I need $75,000.
Mm-hmm.
And they say yay or nay.
Right.
But you got to write it up. You got to show them the economics.
And that's the part. So the write-up of not only the economics, but from a legal standpoint, not that you're giving legal advice, so let me give that. But from a legal standpoint, do I need to go through a private placement memorandum to do that type of deal?
It depends.
Okay.
If it's one guy, let's say that we go to one of these guys who has a little bit of money and they do apartment complex and they say, hey, I'd like to do that deal and be your partner.
Mm-hmm.
Just two of us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't need a private placement for that, but I might want some disclosures to him just because I'm going to be the operator,
right?
Obviously, and he's going to be the investor,
right?
He or she,
right?
But so I probably will do an investment agreement,
gotcha.
But I don't need a private placement memorandum.
And am I setting up a company, Dion, to do that?
Absolutely. Okay. Now, here's the thing: whenever you do business with somebody else, you want to get the ownership of that investment clearly defined.
Gotcha.
If you do a partnerships don't have to be in writing. They can be oral.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with oral partnerships is we all forget what we agreed to.
Stories change.
Money changes.
Right.
Things happen and downside and upside look different. So we always want to get it in writing. And the best way to get it in writing is to use an entity. The other reason why you want to use an entity is because you don't want to be personally, and your investor certainly doesn't want to be personally liable for the entire downside of the investment.
Right.
They want to have what's called limited liability.
Right.
You get that through an entity.
Right.
You don't get that individually.
And again, we're going to go hugely deep into, because we could do podcasts on each of these, but I set up that entity most likely in the state of Texas, LLC.
If that's where the real estate is.
Right. If that's where the real estate is. So you can tell he's an attorney. He's correcting me as I go.
just trying to point out.
No. That's good.
It's important because some people are from Louisiana and they want to go back home and invest.
And then some people hear that every time you set up an LLC, you should set it up in Delaware.
Yeah, right? Which I don't agree with.
Right, right. So we could have a podcast on
we
could
definitely have a podcast about that.
Right.
Or Nevada.
So I set up the LLC. I got one other partner in this particular scenario, let's just say, and they had a $75,000. I sell them membership in the LLC.
Correct.
And we define what that $75,000 buys them.
Right. So the first thing you're going to define is what percentage do they get?
Right.
All right. And here's a clue.
Mm-hmm.
If it's your project,
mm-hmm.
don't give away more than 49%.
Okay.
That's a clue.
All right.
Because
don't give away
more than 49%. If you've got to give more than 49%, go to the next investor.
Because some people think, Dion, if I'm raising $100,000 and I found the deal and it's a good deal and I'm putting $25,000 in, that I only should get 25%.
Yeah, but don't forget, you got to make that deal make money.
Right. Right.
At the end of the day.
Right.
And you can structure the deal where that person gets their 75 back first.
Right.
So their risk is less.
It's less than yours.
And once their risk goes down,
right.
their ownership should go down.
Right.
And
right.
So we don't want to confuse ownership
mm-hmm.
with money. Mm. Those are two different things.
Wait a minute. That's a tweetable moment. Somebody out there tweet that. Don't confuse ownership
with the money.
With the money.
Because I can pay you a distribution out of the entity
right.
that's more than your ownership. So
right.
let's say that we're 60-40.
Mm-hmm.
It's your project. You're 60. I'm 40.
Mm-hmm.
I put the money in.
Mm-hmm.
As the project makes money, you mm-hmm. could accelerate my payout to be 90-10.
Right.
So I could get 90% of the income while you get 10 until I get my
full share
$75,000 back.
Right.
And once I get my 75,
right.
then you get rest. The other thing you have to remember is that $100,000 is not all the money and all the risk that's in your capital stack.
That's true.
You still have one, your money, two, the bank's money. And you're responsible for the bank's money.
Right.
So you have to treat that like your money.
Right. So real quick, this is good. So a lot of people don't know that if you have more than 20% ownership in an entity, most banks are going to make you sign the note.
All banks.
All banks. Well, yeah, banks.
If any partner is more than 19%, so right. 20% or more, most banks have criteria that say that partner must be a guarantor on the loan.
On the loan, right.
And trust me, your investor is not going to want to be a guarantor on the loan.
So how do you handle that?
So you handle that by giving them 19% and a very accelerated payback on their money.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So, or allow them to buy, could you allow them to buy shares afterwards to increase their...
After when? Because
after bank funds.
No, you cannot.
I'm just learning the type of questions I get.
And that's the questions I get too. Right. I get the same questions.
I want to fake right and go left.
And
basically.
Here's the thing. So you make representations to the bank when you get their money.
Right.
And one of the representations you make to them is you will not change the ownership stack.
Right.
Until the bank loan is refunded.
Right, exactly.
And they will. That's one of the representations you make.
And that's called a covenant, by the way.
That's called a covenant. And and the thing about that is there are many covenants, but they are always attempting to keep your equity and your assets as collateral.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you sell it to someone else, they lose collateral. I mean, that's one of the legal issues that happen.
Right.
The other legal issue is if it goes over 19, they want them to be a guarantor.
Right. So we funded this deal. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, 12-unit apartment complex we bought for $500,000.
Yep.
Thank you, Dion, for advising me. Now it's 5 years later.
That cost you $1,000, by the way.
No. Talk about that. Real quick. Like, when I tell people to call an attorney and get this done, they say, okay, cool, I'll call them. And they call them, say, oh, great, I want to work with Dion or whichever attorney. And say, but they're going to charge me X amount of dollars to draw this up. Why wouldn't you pay for that? Like, I have people that try to then get on the internet and write a private placement memorandum or write a LLC or go to one of these places where you can just get a basic LLC done and then write their own operating agreement.
They call that a doc in a box.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can get a doc in a box.
Right, right.
but the thing about it is the only thing you get is your certificate of formation.
Right.
But there's more to running a company than their certificate of formation. Right. You've got organizational resolutions. You've got a company agreement.
How do I get out of it? We got mad at each other. How do I get out of it?
See, all of those things are in that
died.
Agreement. That's
what
right.
happened?
Yeah, does his wife become your partner?
Right.
Or her husband, whichever
right.
way it goes?
So this is an ongoing theme in my podcast. It's okay to partner with people as long as your paperwork is right.
That's
your
right.
Your paperwork has to be right, and you should hire someone, invest that money up front, just like you invest in the property, to get the right paperwork because it will save you in the end. I've seen people in court. I've been an expert witness. I haven't told you that lately in situations where partnerships went awry without great paperwork. So
yeah, and the thing about a partnership, you know, just real quick because I know we're talking about mm-hmm. money made, but the thing about a partnership is it's just like a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You should be looking, okay,
but prenup.
Even more than a marriage, you should be thinking a prenup and a postnup.
Right.
So how do we get into it? What is our arrangement going into it? What's my obligation? What's yours?
Mm-hmm.
What's my arrangement once we get into it? What am I supposed to do? What are you supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not doing what we're supposed to do, how do we get out of it in an orderly fashion?
Right.
Because if you don't do it orderly, a lot of people will make a lot of money and it won't be you and it won't be them.
right. It'll be
the lawyers.
Lawyers, right, exactly.
And the bankruptcy counsel and
exactly.
whoever.
Which is the reason I've been expert witness. I have 4 Chapter 7 trustees that I work for. I'm their real estate broker. And so I've been to court and seen this play out in real court when I'm selling a property. So 5 years later, it's worth $100,000. It's worth $1 million. I bought it for $500. We have our equity stake. We decide to sell it. That's our exit strategy. We're going to sell it. And now I distribute based on what's called an operating agreement.
That's right. You distribute based on what the terms of your operating agreement are.
Right.
And those terms might look like this.
Mm-hmm.
First, I'm going to give you back your $75,000.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to split it by our ownership percentage after that.
Mm-hmm.
And I may put something in between. It's called an equity kicker or sweetener.
Mm-hmm.
I may say, hey, I'll give you your 75 and then I'll give you 10% on your 75.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll split it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a preferential return. And a lot of people are doing that because it incites people to do the transaction because they can get a return off their money more so than they can get from a bank or mutual fund or anything they can invest in right now. So it gives them that added kicker on top of their investment. So
let's add 2 zeros to our scenario.
All right.
And now we go from 500 to 5 million or 50 million.
Okay.
Right? The reason I add the zeros, I want to show people that essentially
it's the same deal.
It's the same deal.
It is.
However,
the capital stack
will be different. So I may still be putting in my 25 or 30. I found the deal, the whole nine. However, I might not be able to find one person to give me $10 million or a very large sum of money. So how does that then change?
All right. So now, you know, this people have been hearing about the concept of crowdfunding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a broad concept, mm-hmm. but it's an old concept that people are just now coming back and putting into legal format.
And apply to technology.
And apply to technology to it. But it's an old concept. How do we get a bunch of people to invest in our project at one time so that everybody doesn't have to put up too much money
mm-hmm.
individually?
Right.
And that's called a private placement.
Right.
All right. So you can do a private placement. You can have up to 35 non-accredited. We'll mm-hmm. talk about what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And unlimited accredited investors.
Okay.
So why do I make that distinction? Because the law makes that distinction.
Okay.
If I have unaccredited investors, and what that means, by the way, is it's all a financial test. Mm-hmm. It really is not a knowledge test. Mm-hmm. It's a financial test. If I don't make at least $100,000 a year
mm-hmm.
or at least have $1 million net worth, I'm considered unaccredited.
Okay.
What does that mean? That means now I have to give you certain disclosures that are required by law. And if I don't give them to you, I could end up being liable for your investment
right.
personally. So that's the dividing line.
Mm-hmm.
And so the accredited investor, though, is a person who makes over $100,000 mm-hmm. a year. Or is it 200?
Yeah.
200 with their spouse?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, 200.
Yeah. Yeah. It's 200, yeah, right.
200
right.
with their spouse, or has $1 million net worth.
Right.
And then what happens there is I don't have a requirement for what do I have to disclose them, but whatever I tell them has to be honest.
Right.
That's
right.
the only requirement.
Right.
So I can tell them, hey, this is a real bad investment, but you could do it anyway.
Right.
And as long as I tell them,
right.
no problem.
Right. Which I've never read a private placement memorandum that doesn't have
that
all
doesn't
the
say
pitfalls.
That. Right.
right.
So the thing about that is it's very important that you decide what type of investor you want to go after.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's insert this crowdfunding concept because this is a great concept. Crowdfunding mm-hmm. is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
So crowdfunding are by nature, they're unaccredited investors.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
But they're going through a platform that's been accredited by the SEC, the platform in which they invest in.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I get these emails from all these different platform sites saying, hey, if you got a 10,000, we got a property in St. Louis.
Yeah, come invest.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so what that allows you to do is get to these unaccredited investors getting more than 35.
So I just want to put a
pause. But it's still a PPM, by the way.
Pause there. So what has happened with this crowdfunding, we take Warner Investments. Warner Investments has been accredited by the SEC, and I'm investing in Warner Investments.
No, that's not true.
Okay.
So let's the steps are this.
Okay.
So Warner Investments has a project,
mm-hmm.
and I go to what's called a crowdfunding platform.
Okay.
And that platform has been registered by the SEC.
Gotcha.
Almost like a broker dealer would have a registration.
Okay.
And that platform then goes out to their investor community and says, right. "I've got this project. Do you want to invest?" And those are the emails you're getting.
Gotcha. So I need sponsors, so I won't name a couple of them. But let's just say Riles Crowdfunding Inc.
Yeah.
Which is a crowdfunding platform went and got accredited by the SEC.
Correct.
And then Riles Crowdfunding Inc., which sounds really good now, turns then around and says, hey, Dion, hey, Mr. Producer, hey, here's an opportunity over in Inside the Loop in Houston.
Here's a commercial real estate project that, it's an apartment complex and it's $10 million or $5 million,
mm-hmm.
and we're raising
X amount of money
toward right. it, and they follow the campaign,
mm-hmm.
and they tell you it's going to take you about 6 months.
Right.
And then they help you with consulting.
So it's kind of like the kick, like, so you see.
Like Kickstarter.
Kickstarter. You yeah. see when people, I'm always getting these when people pass away and they're trying to pass the hat. The new way to pass the hat is.
Crowdfunding.
Crowdfunding. But my friend and they didn't have insurance, a whole nother conversation, a whole nother podcast.
Yeah.
But it's a new way to, instead of to get the phone call from a family member and pass the hat. So
if you think about it, like in the private placement context we were talking about earlier.
Right.
You've created all these family partnerships, right?
Yeah, okay.
These family investors.
Yeah.
They're just coming through the crowdfunding platform.
So,
on a smaller level.
And I'm already telling Mr. Producer, we're going to go over about 5-10 minutes, whatever. I just want to – so, folks, this is behind-the-scenes stuff on the real estate life of Kevin Riles. There's a clock. He put a new clock up. because I go over sometimes. So there's this huge clock in front of me that has that's counting down, that's making, you know, making me, you know. But when conversation is good, sometimes it's just good. I digress. I just want to give y'all behind
that,
the scenes
that he obviously doesn't follow.
Right.
Go ahead. Yes.
Exactly. So with that being said, I want to stay on this crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. How difficult, expensive, or easy it is to set up that crowdfunding platform entity?
Good question. So the entity itself,
right.
Think about registering a broker-dealer like, you know,
okay.
One of the big broker-dealers
like Schwab
with the SEC or Schwab or
yeah.
somebody.
Right.
That's exactly what you have to do for your crowdfunding platform.
Gotcha.
So it's not easy.
Gotcha. Because
it's expensive.
Capital expense. The capital requirements.
You have to have a capital requirement, gotcha. Which means you have to maintain what's called a net capital.
Mm-hmm. Just like a bank.
Just like a bank right. or any other broker-dealer.
Right.
And then you have to, you're regulated, which means you have to continually file annual reports, quarterly reports, monthly reports. They check your finances. They check your
gotcha.
All your paperwork. They check your agreements.
So ironically,
so it's
to
expensive.
Set those up, they have to do private placement memorandums to get their
sometimes
capital.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes
right.
they do.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
exactly.
they have to raise capital just to do that.
Gotcha. And so you guys know, I talked about the emails I get. I get emails for both projects to invest in, and I also get emails from these platforms for, hey, we're looking for projects to help
right.
you raise money. And they make money on the arbitrage, basically, is what they charge you.
That's right.
Both ways.
So. And they charge fees.
Right.
So to put my private project on their platform, mm-hmm. I may get charged $1,500 or $2,000.
Right.
And then they take a percentage of what I raise. That's
right.
the other part of the fee. And so that's how right. they make their
Which,
money.
Which, by the way, and Dion can speak to this better than I can.
It's called a commission.
It's called a commission, and is no different than honestly what you do sometimes as far as raising funds.
I wish I could take a commission.
Yeah, well, I'm not commission.
No,
not commission, but as far as
yeah.
as far as participating in the deal, it doesn't say that you can't, as long as it's disclosed, that you can't participate. The attorney can't participate.
Yeah,
in the deal.
But it's a little difficult with fees and stuff.
You gotcha.
Know, what is the actual fee the client is paying? So you got to be careful with that. But
gotcha.
Yeah, they can. It does
I've,
happen.
Not you. I've seen
it does
that,
happen. Yeah,
because. One of the law firms you mentioned earlier. You know, so anyway, so there are ways to do that. So I say all that.
But I want to say something real quick about crowdfunding before we leave it, because mm-hmm. it's important. And that is, you're still doing a private placement memorandum. You're still doing disclosures.
You're still writing your package.
You're still writing your PPM. And if you don't do that right, you mm-hmm. can still have liabilities. So you have to be real careful with these crowdfunding platforms. It's not that you turn it over to them and you know go to
Here,
sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
You're
okay,
still
got
to work
send me
the
my
deal.
Money. Right.
And they rely on your network. A lot of times to get your deal funded, they ask you for your network.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful.
Got you.
Which ones you use.
And then because after your deal, they're still hitting your network for
Absolutely.
Money.
Absolutely.
So they might be taking money out of your network for another deal. So I didn't think about that. That is true. So, okay. Let's talk about crowdfunding. Let's go back to private placement memorandum because that's, at the end of the day, fundamentally
right.
What that is. What is a private placement memorandum?
So a private placement memorandum is a disclosure document.
Okay.
It's required by the SEC. Whenever you're raising money from the public.
Okay.
So that's why I said your own money, your friends and family, you don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
One investor, you guys are negotiating, he's a partner, you don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to the public, which mm-hmm. means somebody you don't know, and mm-hmm. you try to raise money, mm-hmm. you've got to give them a disclosure document. That's called a private placement.
Mm-hmm.
What's in it mm-hmm. is completely different depending on who your audience is and what you're doing and how
okay.
much money you're raising.
Okay.
So they've just changed the criteria maybe about 6 months ago.
It used to
be three different criteria, under $1 million, mm-hmm. $1 million to $5 million, and $5 million and over. Well, this has got rid of the under $5 million now.
Hmm.
So now it starts at $5 million, you go $5 to $10 million, and then go over.
So you're saying those criteria is if it's under $5 million, I don't need a private placement?
You need a private right. placement,
right.
but that category is no longer registered.
Registered, got you. Okay.
That category is no longer monitored and turned into the SEC,
got
where
you.
It used to be above $1 million to $5
got
million.
You. Okay.
It's no longer that's
got
the
you.
Case.
So when I deliver a private, what are some of the things that are probably in every private placement memorandum?
So every private placement are going to have these fundamental things.
Mm-hmm.
One, who is the sponsor?
Mm-hmm.
What's their background? Five-year mm-hmm. look at your background.
Okay.
They want to make sure you have no, what they call SEC bad boy
mm-hmm.
issues.
Okay.
Never violated the SEC, never raised money and lied, never got sanctioned by the SEC, no fraud, and no federal indictments or anything
mm-hmm.
like that. So you've got to tell them that. The other thing they have is a disclosure. What is the business?
Mm-hmm.
A complete disclosure of the business. So mm-hmm. it's sort of like a business plan.
Mm-hmm.
A financial disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of money do you have? Don't you have?
Mm-hmm.
What are your projections? What are you looking at trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
It has to then disclose what is the equity you're selling, description,
mm-hmm.
what's called description of the securities.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has to disclose what are the risk
mm-hmm.
in investing.
Mm-hmm.
They're called risk factors. Every private placement has those components.
Gotcha. And so going back to our example deal, I've prepared this, I've mm-hmm. done my package, I've put my what we have going on as far as what we're selling. I've put the projections out there. This is all the stuff that I helped to type up.
That's right.
For our that mutual client. Yeah. We go out there, we shop around, and we do presentations, and we met with everybody, accredited and some non-accredited in that particular instance. We got investors. Yes, I want to invest, Kevin. The private placement memorandum says once you want to invest, this is what you have to do. And so one of those is the test for the
accredited versus non-accredited.
Right. Right. And then two, if I remember correctly, in this particular case, we had someone act as the main contact which was you for that test and also things of that nature. So yes, Kevin, I want to put $100,000 into this deal. What then happens? So they've seen the proper flavor memorandum. I've read it. I really am interested. I want to put $100,000 in deal. What happens? So when they're ready to write a check, who do they write that
so
check?
So here's the thing. So there's a couple of attachments to that private price memorandum. Mm-hmm. The first is called a subscription agreement.
Okay.
It's the document that says, I want to invest $100,000. Here's who I am. And I meet the accredited or not accredited test, whatever mm-hmm. the criteria are mm-hmm. for the investment. I sign that document. Mm-hmm. I write the check out to the entity that's doing the private placement. Mm-hmm. I then submit the document with the entity, mm-hmm. and it has to be approved by the sponsor. It's not an automatic because I've decided to do it.
Gotcha.
The sponsor still has the right to approve or reject any investment.
Okay.
If they approve it, mm-hmm. they take it in. Now, here's a key component of a private placement. Mm-hmm. How much money is the minimum amount of money I have to raise mm-hmm. for me to use all the money? Mm.
That's a tweetable Real moment. How much part. Money do I need before I can do everything I need to
and
do?
Why is that important?
Well, the reason is important because if I don't get all the money that I need to do what I
can't
need to do
the project.
I can't do the project.
So I could take your money, go halfway through the project,
be like, ooh,
and the money's gone and I can't finish it. You've just lost your money.
Right.
It happens a lot. So people, when we're looking at private placements, mm-hmm. look at that issue.
What's so if I'm raising $5 million if I'm raising $5 million, I've only raised $2.5 million for the duration of, which I guess we need to talk about that for a quick second as far as duration of the private placement, then I have to stop. And
give the money back.
Give the money back.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So unless you say in your private placement, 2.5 is the minimum.
Right. Exactly.
Then I don't have to give it back.
Right. And so I would assume that people try to do ranges, and minimum is 2.5, but we can go up to X.
Yes, they do. Okay. So you have what's called a min-max.
Right.
So my minimum I'm trying to raise might be $1 million.
Right.
Because I can probably get bank financing for the rest.
Right.
And then my maximum I'm trying to raise might be $5 million because I want to lower the amount of my bank financing and other types of financing. And then I put that into PPM to say, look, if I get at least $1 million, I'm going to go forward with the project.
I can move. Is there an expiration date on the private placement?
Okay, there is an expiration date. It's in the private placement, and it's whatever you set.
Okay.
So normally you'll see 90 days, mm-hmm. and then you'll see the right of the sponsor to extend that 90 days by another 90 days. That's a typical provision you'll see.
Gotcha.
One more thing I want to talk about, capital stack. Mm-hmm. There's another capital stack. I said there were four, right?
All right, yeah.
The bigger deals
have
a fifth.
What's the big
deal? Mezzanine financing.
Okay, yeah.
Mezzanine.
Okay.
And what's the difference between mezzanine and all this stuff? Mm-hmm. Mezzanine is usually they're institutional investors, mm-hmm. they're insurance companies, they're companies. Mm-hmm. And they do what's called a short-term interim financing. Mm-hmm. And they may give you 10% of your capital stack, 20% mm-hmm. of your capital stack. And that's what they do as a living. That's how they make their money. Mm-hmm. They specialize in doing
for a certain percentage
that mezzanine
return,
for a higher percentage
for a higher
return.
Right.
That's what they specialize in. Mm-hmm. And they're sort of in between a bank mm-hmm. and your equity holder. Mm-hmm. They're in between. So when you get larger deals, you mm-hmm. see that fifth.
The fifth out there. See, that's the kind of extra information you do on the Real Estate of Life. Just a little extra nugget out there. It's going to be a test on this in your car when you're listening and working out.
What's the prize? What do I win?
you win a shout out on the Real Estate of Life.
I'll
Kevin
take
Rouse.
It. Speaking of shout out, you asked me about my company, but go ahead.
Yeah. I'm going to. That's how we end. We want people to know, be able to get
I'm
in touch
teasing.
With you. I've gotten my $100,000.
Yeah.
Let's say I've raised my minimum. They've sent the check in. That check goes into just a normal, I'm assuming, bank account of the entity. You also disclose whether that bank account gets interest or not.
Exactly.
In the private placement.
Yeah.
I do remember that. You taught me well. Now I've gone out. I've financed the deal. I've purchased it. So, again, using our previous example, 5-year exit strategy. I'm ready to sell it. We sell it. I disperse funds just like the private placement memorandum.
That's right.
It's a guide. You say it's a disclosure document, but it's also a guiding document.
It is a guiding document. Well, you write your operating agreement based on what's in your private placement.
Right.
They should be the same.
Right.
Now,
right.
I say that because you've seen litigation. I've seen litigation where they're not the same.
Well, you told me on the deal, but over here. And
that's a problem.
Exactly. So, Dion, what, as they say in the tradition of Black church, as we come to a close, what have you seen? What types of deals have you seen? Because a lot of non-accredited investors, and non-accredited, just like Dion said, is not a judgment as to your knowledge level or intellect or anything like that. It's simply a test.
Financial test.
I would say since I do way more commercial now, maybe 6 times out of 10, the calls I'm getting are actually from non-accredited investors, but that have money, right? So it's not the fact that they don't have the money. And so a lot of people feel like this is too complicated or too big of a deal, or if it's not me purchasing it by myself, it's too complicated. What types of deals have you seen non-accredited investors get in as far as private placement memorandum from a real estate standpoint that have had successful conclusions?
Some of the successful ones have been daycare centers with real estate, obviously. Mm-hmm. Those do extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the franchises do well. A couple of these, I'll tell you the industry, but not the client, but these learning centers have done really well with private placements because they tend to get a lot of clients. They tend to do very well financially. So those are good. Restaurants, not so much.
High capital, high risk,
high cost, high expense,
right.
And you have to continue it over and over and over. You have no downtime.
And I know this is the real estate of life, but realize also that
these all have real estate.
But you can use this for investments outside of real estate.
You can. Now, I've seen one deal where they've done private placement to do flips.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go down to the auction house, buy them, rehab them, flip them.
Right.
That's been successful.
Right.
And that's because they have a team.
Right. Yeah. You can't do that by yourself. I just had the last investor of April. We talked about the fact that you can't go in there just by yourself.
Right.
First time and do that. So from a practical standpoint, when do you think then it's best to set up, well, it's always best to set up an entity. When do you think it is best to set up, is there a deal criteria, price criteria, as far as private placement memorandum versus just kind of normal partnership? Is it deal size?
It's really the deal size and where your money's coming from.
Okay. Okay, those are the two tests.
Because I've got some investors, they pull their own money from their IRA.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really don't have any outside money coming in.
Gotcha.
Well, I still want them to do an entity.
Right.
Because I want them to have a business that protects them from any downside risk.
Right.
But they don't really need any private placement or any other documentation because it's all their own money.
Gotcha.
Even if they go to family and friends, still okay.
Gotcha.
It's only a problem when you go to unknown people in the public.
So as we come to a close, I always end when I have guests for them to describe kind of what you do. Obviously, you do this. I wouldn't have you on the show, right. But kind of describe your company, what y'all do, and then ultimately how to get in touch with you.
Okay, so my company is Warner & Associates.
Mm-hmm.
We're a law firm, and what we do is business transactions.
Mm-hmm.
So we do private placements. We do private investment. We do contracting. We do real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Purchases, real estate sales, and we do M&A. So we buy and sell businesses.
Okay.
And only the legal side of it. We're not business brokers. We're not financial guys. We just do the legal side of it. And so we've been doing that since 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of know what we're doing a little bit, but that's what we do.
And this is personal testimony. So Dion is my one of my help desk folks. I can call him and ask him a quick question that'll save my butt sometimes. Also, I've referred many clients to him as well. Does an excellent job, and I would say the preeminent private, when I say private, not large, huge,
right.
Firm like you used to work for, transactional attorney in Houston. But he does transactions all over the United States.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so I just don't Houston folks, that's
where it's legal.
Where it's legal to do. How do people get in touch with you, Dion?
Yeah, they get in touch with me through my website, www.warnerandassociates.com.
Okay.
Or they can just call me on my phone number, 713-807-1007.
Say that one more time.
713-807-1007.
All right. So, guys, again, this is Money May. This is private how to raise private funds for real estate transactions. I want to thank Dion for being on.
Well, thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. I appreciate our friendship and our business relationship over these years. And I'm proud to call you a friend and a business partner as well. Guys, contact Dion. If you're out there thinking about doing a project, really no matter the size, whether it be a small project and you need an LLC to put together, you want somebody to guide you through this. This is what I do for a living. I broker and sell property and I help buyers buy it, but I'm not an attorney. So I can sound really good telling you about a private placement memorandum or telling you about an LLC, but I can't draw one up. The level of experience, 30 plus years of experience in doing this is important. So again, I thank you for listening to The Real Estate of Life, and I will talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening as always. Do you have questions about any of the topics I'm talking about? If you have questions, let me know. Email me at kevin@kevinriles.com. Again, that's kevin@kevinriles.com. I'm going to do a podcast just on the questions that you guys are sending to me. So feel free to send them to me. Again, that's kevin@kevinriles.com.